Now we're coming near the end of the rains. Actually, this will be the last Dhamma talk for this Vasa. Talk a little bit this evening to round up the teachings that we've had through this rains. And also maybe to touch on a few things about how to move on or prepare for what happens afterwards. So for this rains retreat, I've tried to if there's a theme for it, then the theme for me has been to get back to the basics. And so, very appropriately, we've been reciting the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta each week. And so we have that very wonderful chance to bring to mind, to articulate, to reflect on the fundamental teachings that the Buddha taught so clearly in Benares, the teachings of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Noble Path. And as we all know, these are themes that the Buddha kept on coming back to again and again for his whole career, his teaching. He said that the whole of the Dhamma can fit within the Four Noble Truths, just like any footprint of any animal can fit within the footprint of an elephant. So since we are a community who's come together out of faith in the Buddha, out of the wish to practice and realize the Dhamma that he's taught, then these are the teachings that should be the foundation, the framework for everything that we do here. When we started the retreat, for the first 2 weeks we did more of a structured meditation retreat. And during that time especially I tried to keep on coming back to focusing on what is the most fundamentals, the basics of monastic life and of the practice that we're doing here. And all of these things are ways of training, ways of trying to embody and move towards these truths, the Four Noble Truths, of practicing the Eightfold Path. So I talked a lot about things like practicing with contentment, practicing with mindfulness, taking the opportunity during the retreat to walk more slowly, opening and shutting doors carefully, eating a meal with mindfulness, and bringing a sense of care and attention when we're talking with other people, not using our speech in inappropriate ways or excessively. And also one of the most foundational qualities for a Buddhist monastery to remember is the quality of gratitude, which of course we express in a ritual form each day through the Anumodana at the mealtime. And this is actually very important, since it's the foundation of our life here, is the generosity, the kindness, the dana of others. As well, of course, as the kindness of each other, and it's through all of the contributions and efforts of all the people here also, which has kept the monastery running and allows us to do our thing from day to day. So it's important that we always remember this, and that we always acknowledge that gratitude that we have, and the kindness that others have shown, that's enabled us to live here, to practice. So of course in a place like this, where we're living a life of quiet and life of solitude, in a conventional sense, I'm the teacher in this monastery, but really I see my job is not really as a teacher, but my job is to try to communicate the Buddha's teachings and to try to bring them in a way which is accurate and careful, but also in a way which is relevant and hopefully encouraging and useful. One of the things, of course, with the Buddha's teachings, as with any other teachings, is that they become stale when the teachings are 2,500 years old and they've been repeated so many times. That it's very easy to just say the same things again and again and again, repeat the platitudes and repeat the Dhamma sayings and the phrases and things like that. It's very easy to do that. And in a way, there's nothing wrong with it. But the problem is that it's not living. It's not a living tradition. It's just repeating something that's just been handed down, and so it loses that spark. And of course, the problem is, even though that preserves the letter of the teaching, but when the Buddha himself taught, it wasn't a dead teaching. It was a live teaching. It had that spark to it. So this is why when I'm trying to teach the Dhamma, I always try to, as well as being authentic to what the Buddha taught, I always try to shift the perspective around a bit and try to put things from my own perspective. And of course, as every Dhamma teacher will do. But that's just my perspective, my take on things, that's all. the real teaching is the Dhamma itself, and it's up to each one of you to find that living spark of the Dhamma within yourself. That living spark of the Dhamma. And so in quite a profound sense, while the Buddha's teachings give us the framework, the concepts, the ideas that we practice with, but also our teacher is much broader. Our teacher is Dhamma in a broader sense, Dhamma in the sense of nature, Dhamma in the sense of the way that things are, Dhamma in the sense of whatever we're surrounded with becomes our teacher. So we are very fortunate to have this chance in such a beautiful setting in nature. The rocks and the trees, beautiful sky, and the rain, the cold nights, the bugs in the ground, the birds in the air. So these are all our friends. These are all part of who we are, part of what gives us a meaning and a life. We can't live without the air, the water, all the things we're surrounded with. So the retreat's a time for us to slow down and notice these things, appreciate them. And it's really important to remember and to notice that that the real thing, the real work that's done on a retreat is that work which happens invisibly, those things that happen silently, that moment of perception, that quiet time of gratitude. All the little things. And those are the moments that gradually build up, even though we don't necessarily notice them or don't think of them as particularly important. But they're little moments of insight. Can gradually have quite a profound effect. So each person here has their own path. On a spiritual journey. And those paths, of course, are very different. So these Four Noble Truths, when we're practicing them, I think the reason why that they're such a profound and important teaching is because they're hidden in plain sight. The reality of suffering is just so ever present. It's just there whenever we look. The cause of suffering also is there all the time. And if we slow down and we use our mindfulness, then we can feel with every step, we can understand that there's dukkha in that. There's holding on and attachment to it. Every time we turn around, every time we talk to someone, every time we sit to meditate, every time we read a book, every time we drink a glass of water, then there's dukkha in that. And if we look and we see where does that dukkha come from, then we realize, oh, actually it comes from our own attachments. That's all. So this is this quality of the Dhamma, which is just all pervasive. On the one hand, the Dhamma is something which is very subtle, very hard to see, hard to know. On the other hand, Dhamma is all we've ever known. We've never known anything in our whole life which is not Dhamma. So this is why the Buddha has said that there's no point in running around from here to there looking for the answers. It's just the five khandhas, just the aggregates: form, feeling, perception, volition, consciousness. They're just there, they just happen. That's all there is to it. Whatever we've experienced in our life is just variations on this. Whatever we will experience in this life or even in future lives, nothing more than variations on these five aggregates. So this is the purpose of being here, the purpose of the practice that we're doing, is not to enjoy the good food or to spend time hanging out with your mates or any of those kinds of things. The purpose of being here is to understand what this is, what this dukkha is, what these five aggregates are, and to understand the cause of it is through holding on and attachment, to understand that letting go of it leads to peace. And understand that there is a way that we can practice that will lead to that sense, that peace. These are these teachings which the Buddha gave us with his very great wisdom and his very great compassion. Remember this. Don't let yourself forget it. Don't let yourself forget how beautiful the Dhamma is. Don't let yourself forget how kind the Buddha was to teach this. Don't let yourself forget how grateful we need to be to all of those who preserved, passed down this teaching, made it available for it, made it possible for us to stay in such a beautiful place and to practice and to try to see that teaching for ourselves. It's something very rare, very precious. As we move towards the end of the retreat, the natural tendency, on the one hand, we kind of feel a sense of kind of regret or nervousness that the retreat's coming up. Maybe we think that, you know, we've just started to get our practice together and then the retreat will come up and it'll fall apart, so there's a bit of fear there. Or maybe there's a sense of regret or loss, you feel that we should have practiced more diligently, we've wasted our time and now that's the end of it. Or else there's a feeling of expectation. Yay, finally I'll be able to do all those exciting things that I've been missing out on, like, well, I can't really think of any, but I'm sure there must be lots of exciting things. Go surfing or bungee jumping, something I'm not quite sure. And always the issue or the question is, well, how does the Dhamma apply? How do you bring what's experienced in a retreat back into the real world? And I think this is one of the advantages of a monastery like Santi, which is quite open, and where we have different things happening here. So it's not like a fully intensive retreat where everybody's just keeping silence and meditating all day every day. And that makes the bridge from one, one universe to the other, one reality to the other, makes it even harder. Whereas here we have, we do still talk to each other, we still have a bit of chores to do and a bit of teaching and so on. So it's more kind of a gentle reintegration with the world, I hope. It's something I really noticed quite drastically the first few times when I've been on retreat or staying in the monastery for extensive periods. And then when I went back into the world, and I was living in Thailand at the time, so of course the world is, Thai cities, which tend to be pretty full on, very crowded and noisy and smelly and lots of things distracting and everything. So, I was very conscious of being mindful, of being restrained, and so on and so forth. And it's quite a bit of work to try to maintain it. As things have gone on, and as the years go on, these things become easier and much more natural. And these days, I don't really have a a problem. I've done it so many times. And the main trick or the main thing to remember is a quality which I've talked about quite a lot at the start of the retreat also, which is sampajanya, is clear comprehension, and especially comprehension in the sense of understanding what's appropriate in a particular context. So when we're on retreat, we act in a certain way, we speak in a certain way, behave in a certain way, and that's appropriate in that context. And when we're doing other things, then it's appropriate to act in different ways or speak in different kinds of ways. So it's important not to try to force ourselves to be on retreat when we're not. That just causes suffering. And just the same way, it's important to not bring those kind of worldly attitudes, those things we've been used to doing outside or in different contexts, and we make an effort to drop those when we start the retreat and practice according to what's useful in this context. So it's the same way. So it's all about just knowing what's this for, what's the purpose of this, if we're doing it. If you're going somewhere or doing something or doing some work or whatever you're doing, why am I doing this? What's the purpose? What's it all about? And we understand the context, we understand what it's for, then we understand how to do that, how to do that in the right way. So whatever we're doing, we can always find peace in that. And I think this is really important to remember. There's peace in everything. And wherever we look, if we want to find peace, we can find it. When I go down to Sydney with Chandra and we were driving around, and you know, I can take that chance to do different kinds of Dhamma practices. Sometimes I do, like just practicing compassion for all the people that you see. You see people walking on the streets in Sydney and driving on the streets. They really need a bit of compassion. They're all so stressed and running around. So just a bit of metta for all of them as you go past. May you be happy. Sometimes it's just a practice with emptiness, and just in the middle of the busy street, you just look at the space in between the cars, or the space inside the cars, the space in between the people. Or even if it's a really busy, crowded sidewalk, you just look what's happening 1 meter above everyone's heads. There's nothing there. We think it's so crowded, but actually it's just that tiny little bit of space that's crowded. Everything else is still empty. The sky is still big. The sky is still empty. So if we want to, if we pay attention in the right way, we can find peace wherever we are. But we won't find that peace as long as we're holding on to an idea of peace or a memory of peace, which is something else, something other than where we are. And then that's never peaceful. So to be satisfied, to be content, wherever we are, whatever we're doing. It's where we find the true peace. So with only a week to go to the end of the rains, then just make sure that you know you keep practicing. Keep this time as a sacred time. It's a time for all of us to share and to support each other in this space for practicing our meditation and practicing Dhamma. So the time will end soon enough. For now, we just keep the peace together. So this is my little talk for you this evening. And I offer this for your reflection. I'd like to invite if there's any comments or questions.
Expressed by a range of people, and because in this way I really feel more truths can actually reach me that way. You know? I was very intrigued when you said peace can be found in anything. And I really like that. I'll take that away tonight. And I live, I know I should be grateful. I've got a roof over my head. The house is paid off. I've got no mortgage. You know? There's so many beautiful things about my, I love my house. I love my garden. You know, great neighbours. But I'm surrounded by these dogs. You know. And I've been throwing all the Buddhist philosophy out for these dogs that I can find. I've been trying to have metta for the dog, and metta for the owners of the dog, and metta for myself. You know, and I've been thinking of the fire sutra, you know, the ear is on fire, the sound is on fire. You know, I'm trying to. Yeah, I can just see the whole pad, the wheel of independent origination. Spinning around, and I can see my own attachment, and I can see, I've been trying to look at the emptiness of it, and looking at the sunyata, it's anatta, it's, you know, it's tathata, you know, it's a few of these. I've just been trying to throw everything I can think of out, all the Dharma talks and all the, you know, stuff I've read and been thinking about, and it still bothers me, you know, I can't seem to get past it, you know. And I'm trying to develop different strategies, you know, either avoidance or put music on, or try to nut it out, you know, with Buddhist, philosophy and so on. And I know it's my own attachment to peace and quietness, I think it's my attachment to. The beautiful sounds that set me up for when I have bad sounds, they affect me. So maybe it's because I like silence too much, or I'm too attached to silence and quietude and beautiful sounds. My attachment to that is just setting me up for when something dares to come along interface with me. I don't know what to do about it. I really don't. I've been on pilgrimages. I've read some books. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh. And I've been on Buddha Dasa. And I've so many Dharma talks. So I've had, you know, more than hairs in my head. You know, and still to this day it bothers me. And I think, first of all, I think, you know. The powers that be, the bodhisattvas of God, or whatever it is put me here in Bandhanen, because I'm suddenly these wonderful monasteries. But also putting these dogs in my path. I almost feel like if I can, I think my own enlightenment probably hinges on how I deal with that sound. You know, I just think it's one phenomenon. That I tend to focus on, and because I can focus on that quite easily, and I think if I just went far enough, and sorry, I'm talking too much, I always feel like that could be the thing that could swing it for me, you know, I could go a little bit further on the Dharma path, and once I get over that hurdle of this thing that I think I'm too attached to being comfortable, you know, in many ways. Although I'm no stranger at getting out of my comfort zone, but that, sorry, you know, it's just a big thing with me. I couldn't help but not bring it up tonight. When I heard you say that you can find peace in everything, you know, sorry, I'm talking too much, but gotta get it out, you know.
Well, why don't you try using the dogs as your meditation object? Every time you hear them barking, sit down and meditate and just listen to them barking.
Listen to them, rather than earplugs.
Yeah, just listen to them.
But I'll just hear them, you know.
Yeah, but just sit there and listen to them. Every time they start barking, just sit there and listen. Mm. Right? And if you focus on it, it's like if you have a pain or something in your body, if you just pay attention to it and watch it with compassion, then it becomes something which is not so scary anymore. The same way, if you just listen to the dogs, listen with compassion, you know, look for if there's aversion coming up, then after a while it won't seem so important. And after a while what you'll find is that, first of all, that they stop. They're not actually barking all the time. And you'll find that there's gaps between the sounds. So each time they bark, there's a little gap there. You'll find that sometimes they're barking, sometimes not. And then as you pay attention to it more and more, you realize actually it's just sound. And you won't give it so much significance. That's what I would suggest. Just listen to it.
I know, it's just, the sound is just echoing and bouncing around my head, and I'm magnifying it, and I'm making it more important than it need be, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. But I'll try that. It seems like counterintuitive to actually meditate it really on the thing that always applies. Like I used to sit, I can sit like full lotus for an hour and a half or something, 2 hours or something now without it affecting me. But I reckon in the beginning it was so painful, you know, to even sit 10 minutes.
Right.
And right now this is like how I was back then with the dog, you know. If I listen to the dog for 10 minutes, you know, it's really painful. You know. And, sorry, I don't mean this, to turn this whole thing tonight to be my problem with the dogs, but thank you, Ajahn, for that. I will try that and keep you posted how it's going.
Let us know, yeah.
I experienced something a little bit similar briefly yesterday in the cave when the guy who's building was there with the generator on and the circular saw and things, and I was hiding up in the back corner doing some chanting. And it kind of, first of all, it kind of stopped me in my tracks, and I was like, oh, okay, hearing these really intense noises. And that place for me is very much about the quiet and then the sound in the cave. But then I kind of just went, okay, well, that's the sound, and kept chanting, and it became kind of a jam session with the they just became part of the chant, and it was really quite good, actually. And then I meditated after that, and the sound was still going, but it was kind of this, yep, that's the sound that's going on.
That's good.
Quite nice. I wonder if I can do it with my violin students.
Well, I always had this idea of doing the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta with like industrial noise as a soundtrack.
Wheels.
Yeah, wheels and
train tracks
and stuff. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's finish up by paying respects.
Uh-huh.